Hey everyone, it's your guy Xander. This is the second segment of It's Only Rock and Roll. If you've heard the first segment so far, then welcome back to the program. If this is the first segment you're hearing, well then welcome to the program. This is a show where I basically just ramble on about rock and roll, music and culture, and all subjects related to that. On this segment, we're going to talk about punk rock. Five misconceptions about punk rock music. Now I know what you're thinking. Do we really need another piece about what punk is and is not? But hear me out, that's not exactly what I'm doing here. I just want to talk about a few things that are considered to be defining characteristics of punk that I don't feel are actually very necessary, or just historical inaccuracies. Of course, a lot of it will be just my opinion, but in general, I just want to talk a little bit about where some people might be wrong if they're either outsiders to punk and have misconceptions about what it is, or maybe if they're actually involved in punk or set up these unnecessary rules for what it's supposed to be or where it came from. You know, you'll see. It's all along the lines of that, though. So for some reason, I couldn't describe what I was doing without basically giving it all away or describing exactly what the content is going to be here. But I wouldn't even call it content, actually. I'm just rambling, as I said in the intro. But I don't know why. I see some popular beliefs about punk that I don't think are necessarily true. And sometimes they give it a bad name, or sometimes they're just wrong, in my opinion. So really no more needs to be said, but what we can do is get right into it now. Now, the first one here is not the most interesting, and this is not necessarily uncommon knowledge, but for some reason it's still a debate. And there are a lot of people out there that believe that punk rock began in England, which is just not true. Now, people can disagree on who the first definitive punk band was, and the reason a lot of people think it comes from England is generally because of the Sex Pistols or the Clash. And when it comes to the Clash, there are a lot of people who believe that now that they've introduced this radical political element to it, it's no longer garage rock or just rock and roll. Now it's punk rock. But historically speaking, the first bands who really were making this music are from the USA. Not only in the first wave, which would have been the Ramones, who were playing their first gigs by 1974 and are really one of the first bands to be considered purely punk rock, but the root sound is also American because it comes from Detroit with bands like the MC5 and the Stooges. It is an interesting subject, though, because I understand why there are two sides to the debate of where it really began, because it was happening on the East Coast of the United States and England at the same time, and it was two separate movements, but they were also one in the same. Similar ideas, similar music, obviously. But when you look at the timeline, it's really mostly American at the beginning. Because if you ask me, and this is where my opinion comes into it, but while they consider the Ramones from New York to be the first real punk band, and the Stooges and the MC5 now are called proto-punk, or like the earliest punk, I think the New York Dolls, who released their first album in 1973, are really the first punk band. That's another New York band, and really New York was the epicenter of it all because of, obviously, we all know of CBGB, but there were other clubs that are very famous when you look at punk history. But besides the Ramones and the bands that were actually from New York, you had bands who still felt that this was the place to be, and this is where they really became something. Bands like Dead Boys from Cleveland, Ohio, were, when you look back, they're basically a New York punk band. They were a mainstay at CBGB. They were produced by Hilly Kristal, the man who ran and founded the club CBGBs. So just from, like, when you look at the timeline, it's very obvious that punk exploded in England and became what it was just right after what happened in the United States. But the reason I give the USA the credit, and most rock historians would give USA the credit, is because the very roots of it are definitely either on the east coast of the United States or in Detroit, Michigan. Okay, so I'm on to my second point here, but really, it should be number four on the list, because doing a countdown just seems to make a lot more sense when doing a list. So number four is, I mean, this may really just be an opinion piece here, but I think the idea that punk rock began as a purely political statement is false. More specifically, people really see it as a radical left-wing ideology that's associated with punk, and in context, it's not just like generally leftism. Usually it's anarchism or some sort of libertarian brand of socialism or something like that. Now, it's very true that punk very quickly became associated with ideals like that, and the majority of bands who do espouse some politics are generally left-wing, and I think the reason is just because that's, for the most part, that's the anti-establishment movements of the United States have been, like, you know, left-wing and anarchist, and that's the same in Europe as well. So it only makes sense that people with radical politics are going to gravitate towards a style of music that really has an anti-establishment spirit, but I think the original spirit is more of a general anti-establishment attitude than a, like, something that has a specific socio-political philosophy behind it. I'm not saying that that does not happen, I'm just saying that if someone tries to speak from a historical standpoint and say that's what it began as, I would have to disagree there. I will say this, though, when you go back to the very roots and you look at the MC5, they were a very obviously left-wing, anarchistic band, although that didn't always come out in their lyrics, but everyone knows that that's the political ties that they had, and that is the counterculture movement that they were associated with. But when you fast forward a little bit and look into the first wave of what's now considered to be pure punk music, and specifically the New York scene, or just, you know, the East Coast United States early punk scene, it was more of an art movement. And when you listen to, say, a Dead Boys record or a Ramones album, you hear a lot of just general, either generally angry tunes or just fun tunes, but either way, it's like a really realistic perspective that they offer, and in some ways, a lot of it might have a deeper political meaning, but you also have songs that are just about everyday life. They're just not sugar-coated, and that was the point. A lot of these people were living an existence that was very dangerous just because of the environment that they come from. So what they offered was like a look at how the world is through their lens, where it's like survival of the fittest, and they live in the concrete jungle and all that kind of stuff, and there's drugs everywhere and gangs and violence, and they might not necessarily enjoy that, but like music is their way of saying that there's something wrong with the world. So yeah, that is very political, but the misconception is that from the start, there was a very specific, deeply socio-political message that was required for music to be considered punk. I have to say two things about English punk, though. One, that was a lot more political in the early days, for sure. And I have to give them credit, because I was just talking about how the USA deserves more credit for the creation of this music, but England does have three out of the big four of punk bands, and the big four is just my list. I don't know if other people do this, but ever since thrash metal had that thing where they decided, well, here's the big four bands, I've been doing that with, like, every genre of music since then. So I have a big four in all genres now. With punk, it's the Ramones, the only American band on the list, and then the other three are English bands. You got The Clash, The Damned, and of course, The Sex Pistols. One of those bands, The Clash, being particularly political and left-wing, and as I said, that is a lot of people's idea of where punk started, was when The Clash made it political. So there's that too. And I just want to say, by the way, I'm only pointing out that those political ideas are common in punk. I'm not giving my own opinion on politics or anything like that. And me saying that they're necessary or unnecessary in punk music doesn't mean that I think they're right or wrong. I have, as of right now, I'm not expressing any views on that, so I just want to make that clear as well. Okay, so whether this is a countdown or whether we're counting up, this is number three. Punk is supposed to be the anti-music. A lot of critics say that, a lot of people who don't like punk say that, and a lot of people who are into it say that as well, that musicianship is not required. Well, that's not true of any music, and I'll tell you why that is. If you ask me, the only metric for whether music is good or not is whether it sounds good or not. Which I know seems very complicated, but that's only because it's a simple philosophy in an overcomplicated world of music, okay? Many times in history, a great type of music was based on simple musical ideas, including the blues. But even though you can say that about certain styles of music, including punk, it's not always simple. So I have 2 points to make about this. First of all, technically speaking, you could say that generally a lot of punk music might not be that impressive if you're looking for technicality, but capturing an energy and making the room come alive and moving people with your music and effectively expressing a feeling is not easy, no matter how simple your approach is. So if we're speaking on bands who are generally pretty musically simple, well, there's an idea that anyone can do it, and a lot of people who did not get punk, and a lot of the British heavy metal bands during the new wave of British heavy metal were like this. A lot of them rejected punk, and that was probably specifically English punk, which isn't, you know, it's the same as American and all that, but in a lot of ways. But they decided it's so simple, anyone can do it, it's for people who don't really know how to play music. But what do you mean by that? I mean, because clearly they knew how to write songs, and that's all you really need, isn't it? But here's what I noticed. Even when certain people write what they call three-chord wonders, it's not good unless there's some kind of groove to it. And if you listen very carefully... I'm sorry, there was a distraction there. But as I was saying, if you listen very carefully to, say, Johnny Ramone playing guitar, or Pat Smear from The Germs, or Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols, they may very well use what's considered a common and very simple chord progression in their music, but if you pay attention, there's, when it comes to these great songwriters, there's a lot of nuance to their playing, and even in two or three chords, I mean, they... Pay attention, man. You might hear, they just have, like, these unique nuances that really express their personalities and make them come through the music. So, like, they might palm mute in a few places, or they might turn that power chord into a full bar chord, but just for, like, one strum, and then go back to it. So, there's this very actually complicated rhythm sometimes that you can find, even when it's what some would call just a 3-chord generic song. And they have those because they know that those little tricks that they do serve the song, and they know exactly what they're doing. Now, you might have a band that truly makes generic music, and they can do a very similar, if not the same, chord progression, but they can't make it come alive with those nuances because they just play it straight, and they don't put any groove or feel into it. But, of course, I'm just talking about musicians who generally do have a pretty simple approach. I've already explained that I don't believe that that makes music bad, but at the same time, the idea that punk musicians are just 3-chord wonders is also false, because there is a lot of dynamic and interesting music in the early days. Like, when you go back to the Stooges, you have James Williamson, the guy who became the lead guitarist by the third album, Raw Power, and he has a reputation of filling all the space with his guitar, so his riffs are actually really complicated and really rich sounding. So, of course, that's when he took over. I'm a person who likes to give credit where it's due. So, James Williamson took over for Ron Ashton. Ron Ashton ended up moving to bass for Raw Power, but the first two Stooges albums, which was the self-titled The Stooges and Funhouse, featured Ron Ashton on lead guitar, and he was also amazing. He liked to do a lot of effects-driven sounds. He was very good with the wah pedal, but he was also a master at the riff, just like James Williamson was. That might not be the best example, though, given the fact that this is really just pre-punk. So, looking at actual punk music and anything that came after it, or existed under that umbrella from the mid-70s when punk started and beyond, I mean, you have actually a lot of innovation. You ended up in the 80s having bands like The Replacements and Husker Du, and in the late 80s you had like The Lemonheads and Mudhoney and Sonic Youth, which people think those are grunge bands, but that's, I fucking hate that, because grunge is just a lot of good punk and a lot of good metal, and just, I know it has certain defining characteristics, and that's why the tabloids gave it a name, but let's not forget that Sonic Youth and Mudhoney and the Lemonheads are just really good punk bands, and musically speaking, it might not be the most challenging, but it certainly is very interesting and dynamic, and it's anything but a 3-chord wonder, man. They really, the guitar players of those bands really know their way around a fretboard. In the case of Mudhoney, a lot of power chords, but a lot of interesting patterns, too. And going back to Ron Ashton and James Williamson, there is no shortage of phenomenal lead guitar players throughout the history of punk. I want to add that in there, too, man. Captain Sensible from The Damned, I can't remember who this was, but when I watched their documentary recently, someone said he's like the Jimi Hendrix of punk. Now, he might not be Jimi Hendrix by any stretch of the imagination, but in terms of really being able to put his soul into the notes on his guitar and to really be like interesting and have a vibe, that would definitely describe him for sure. So I'm not going to go down a long list of great lead guitar players, and I don't want to only give credit to the guitar players. There are great vocalists like Danzig and Lee Ving from Fear, and a lot of good rhythm sections too, but I don't want to get too into that. I just want to stick to my main point. The idea that punk music doesn't require musicianship, or that it's for a bunch of people who don't actually know how to play music, is a very popular belief and a common misconception, and it is bullshit. So I'm on the second to last point here, and this is about actually a popular belief among the punk crowd itself, whether it's the fans or the musicians, but at some point we've decided that punk rock cannot be defined, and my last three examples here of what I feel are misconceptions about punk music are, they're sort of more so topics that I'm interested in addressing because it gives me a chance to go over some of the history of it. Now, this idea that punk rock cannot be defined, I'll be honest, it just kind of annoys me because it doesn't make any sense, and that's why this is going to be a very short segment right here. Every type of music has defining characteristics, and that does not mean that there isn't room for innovation or a diverse musical landscape that can still exist under one umbrella. And I don't know why punk music would be an exception to that rule. I understand the idea of not wanting to follow rules or conform to strict guidelines, but you don't have to do that just to fit in with a certain characterization of music. I mean, whether anyone likes it or not, it's not punk rock unless musically it has some elements of what we originally decided to label as punk rock music. So, to sum it up, that obviously has to be a sound that is sort of based in rock and roll and has some amount of basic attitude to it. And I don't want to necessarily say that it has aggression necessarily all the time, but it certainly has like a straightforward approach and definitely stylistically has to be somewhat based in rock and roll. Now, the attitude of breaking rules and not going along with what people expect of you is great. So people should and do express that in all styles of music. Whatever you come up with creatively is what you do. But the reality is, you're not in a punk band unless you're breaking rules and delivering that attitude within the context of a certain style of music that can be defined as punk music. So when you say it's undefinable, it loses its charm and its unique identity, really. And it's supposed to be the term for music that produces a certain energy and speaks to a certain mindset, just like all styles of music are. So I know it would seem cooler if you could define it because there are literally no boundaries, and there doesn't have to be strict boundaries, and there's a lot of room for innovation and all that, but it has to fit in some guideline. Otherwise, it's not unique, and there's no reason to identify with it, and it loses its charm, as I said. So that's the end of that one there. Last but not least, and this is mostly my opinion, but I feel like it's actually a misconception that punk rock was meant to be anti-rock and roll, which ties into the overall theme of this show, but I'll get to that in a minute. When these young, rebellious bands were coming up on the scene in the 70s, they wanted to offend you, but that's because they didn't want to go with the status quo. So when rock and roll had been taken to extremes in terms of musical excess and image and all of that, they just wanted to bring it back to the original spirit of rock and roll. So they would, whether they really meant it or not, and whether they were really being honest about their own tastes in music, they would willingly tell you that they hated Led Zeppelin and the Beatles and all of that, and the Rolling Stones, of course, but that's because it's what popular culture was into. And with all of that said, what a lot of people forget is that it was actually, like, supposed to be a throwback to the original idea of rock and roll. So I can't say for sure whether all of those bands individually liked Led Zeppelin and the Stones or whether they didn't, but I can tell you that the point was only to separate themselves as a new and rebellious youth movement, and it was a more powerful statement to say that you didn't have idols and that you didn't have to take seriously the people that came before you because you wanted to smash the entire system and start over. But I think that sentiment got blown out of proportion a little bit because, honestly, I mean, punk music is just rock and roll. And a lot of the original bands know that, and a lot of bands that have existed since then, they know that. Now, they're a very hard line and more righteous. I'm not saying that in a bad way, but they're more like strict scenes and subcultures within punk that really, like, you can't really fit in there unless you are DIY and anti-industry and all that. But the original spirit of punk, I don't think was anti-rock and roll. I think it was just anti-rock and roll excess. So when you're coming from arena rock of the early 70s, where you have 20-minute guitar solos and an extravagant light show and all that that people feel like is unnecessary, when they want to go back to the original idea of rock and roll, where you didn't really need all of that. You just needed an energy and a little bit of an anti-establishment attitude, and the tunes were to the point and catchy, and the rock and roll excess would have been what came shortly after that, which is in the 60s, when you had hippies experimenting and making 20-minute songs, sort of like what the arena rock acts after them were doing, except it was a little bit more experimental and exploring different sounds, and it just appeared to become oversaturated. Excuse me. But I don't think punk should be separated from rock and roll. I think in rock history, punk has a very important place, and it certainly is true to the idea of what Chuck Berry and Little Richard were trying to get across. But now, because of those little offensive statements that young punks in the 70s had to make about what they called rock dinosaurs, there's been this hard rule ever since that you have to separate yourself from rock and roll. You're not allowed to like bigger bands or stadium bands or whatever. You're not allowed to like Zeppelin and the Stones, and that's not the case for everyone, but there is a rule there, and people do consider punk and rock and roll to be separate movements, although I feel that people who are really passionate about rock and roll in general, they accept punk, and people who really understand punk, they accept it as a form of rock and roll. And all of that ties in with the main point of the show, because basically, I'm a fan of all sorts of rock and roll music, and I don't really put up barriers for myself, so that's why I decided to call this program It's Only Rock and Roll. I'm not saying that everyone has to have a diverse taste in rock music, but I'll say this, and I think a lot of people would agree with me, rock culture is very segmented, and there are a lot of different tribes that exist, and rock and roll being the rebellious music that it is, people tend to want to identify with a certain movement, and that makes them think they have to actively reject other styles of music. I think that is a problem with a small percentage of the rock community, and you have people who are genuinely just into one style, and that's cool. They're doing what they do, but I know from personal experience, growing up as a metalhead and a punk rocker, I mean, I actively rejected what I thought wouldn't be cool with the crowd that I wanted to identify with. So it really, I didn't look at music as like, is it good or not? It was more like, does it fit the description of the culture I want to identify with? Now, that doesn't mean I wasn't actually into what I was into, but I thought that it meant that I had to conform to that side, and if I liked anything else, I had to call it a guilty pleasure, or I just had to stop listening to it and just reject it. It makes no sense at all. So my philosophy is that if it's good rock music, it's good rock music. And once I grew up and knocked down those barriers about what I thought I was allowed to like or not, I found that there's so many good sounds, and I certainly have always appreciated the greats like Led Zeppelin and Sabbath, but there's a world of bands that I never really gave the time of day because of the tribalism that I subscribed to growing up. So basically, I'm now at a point where I'm a fan and a follower of rock culture in general, and I listen to a lot of music. I watch a lot of movies that are based on it, and I'm just here to, like, give my opinion so that other fans can, you know, check it out, and maybe they can relate to some of it. So I figured, since that last point I made there on the segment sort of tied into that, I'd go ahead and explain further, like, what I'm doing with this show, and it just happened to tie in that way. So I guess I'll end it there. Thanks for listening, and let me just give you a quick rundown of what I'll be doing next time. So I had a lot of fun doing that, like, misconception segment, and I think I'll do that for more genres. I don't know if it'll be 5 every time. It'll just be, like, whatever misconceptions I think there are about certain styles of music. Next, I'm going to do heavy metal for sure. But I'll get the grunge segment out of the way. There's a misconception that grunge is a real thing, and that's false. So that's the end of that segment. But no, really, I'll actually get into that at some point. But next time, one of the subjects will actually definitely tie into this episode, because I mentioned the idea of the rock star a couple of times in some indirect way when I was talking about the anti-rock and roll sentiment. So next time, or on the next segment, I want to dive into the idea of the rock star and whether or not that's even a relevant concept in today's world, and whether people really even take that idea seriously, and whether the mysterious atmosphere and larger-than-life presence of a rock star is really easy to achieve like it was back in the day, if you can still just be that special, or if the technology age has brought us so close to musicians that they don't feel like they exist on a higher plane than us anymore. And the whole idea of a larger-than-life rock star that you idolize might not even really be realistic anymore. But certainly, I'll explain that better and explain much more about that on the next segment of It's Only Rock and Roll. Thank you so much for listening.